The problem with Akiya banks is not just that they're at the lower end of the scale money-wise. They are, but there are others as well. The problem is that they are very cumbersome to work with. So some of them will straight out refuse to deal with foreigners. Some of them will tell us that we need to book viewing 6 months in advance. It's just a lot more hoops to jump through with an Akiya bank just because they're government, I guess, right? Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right. As always, one quick reminder before we get into today's episode. Pre-registration for the April 2026 spring session of the Japan Real Estate Summit, taking place at the Pullman Hotel Tamachi and online, is now open. We're offering, again, pretty substantial discounts on the already very affordable tickets. So if you'd like to attend, either in person or online, if you'd like to hear from, consult with a very impressive list of speakers and experts on all topics, from finance and financing, investment, Akiya, hospitality properties, family homes, renovations, repairs, accounting, business, all other topics related to the real estate market here in Japan. And if you'd also like to meet and network with and forge connections with like-minded property enthusiasts like yourselves and property professionals, pause this episode for a minute, hop over to our website, nippontradings.com. That's N-I-P-P-O-N, nippontradings, with an S, all one word, .com, and pre-register for those discounted in-person or online tickets today. All right, so for today's episode, this is a pretty long one, and again features two back-to-back conversations with potential buyers. This first one is audio only, and in it I chat with an Australian buyer who incidentally is also invested in the Philippines, and that gave me a great chance to pick his brain a bit and gather some insights on the current state of the real estate market there, which was quite interesting for me and hopefully for some of you as well. And after that short initial segue, we got right into investment portfolios in Japan. So we talked about Japan's tenant-oriented legislation, the lack of inspections for tenanted properties, the renewals of tenancy leases, and how to reclaim occupancy when required, the possibility to raise the rent between lease renewals. We then also spoke about typical investment yields in Japan, various locations, available financing options for non-residents, and when those make sense. The short-lived nature of Japanese wooden structures, both from a practical and tax perspective. And then we also talked, obviously, investment strategies, what makes for a comfortable, semi-passive, hands-off investment in Japan, and what are the price ranges for those, how quickly properties sell here, and of course about how our services work. So have a listen, and I'll see you again right after this and right before the next recording. Okay, so let me just browse through your email to refresh my ailing memory. Give me a second.
Okay, I can give you a brief. So I watched some YouTube where I think you guys had like an event in Tokyo about investing in Japanese property, and that looked interesting. I've been investing in, so I live in Australia, been investing in the Philippines. My wife is Filipino. My son-in-law is Oh, not my son-in-law. My stepson is going out with a Japanese woman, and which is all good. So I thought, no, maybe we should look at Japan. My wife really likes Japan as well. The Philippine real estate market has kind of, it didn't plummet, but it's kind of gotten real stale. So there's no growth or anything like that. So,
Okay, that's interesting. I was actually interested in the Philippines. That's a good tip. Thank you.
it's just the. They have there's an oversupply of condos, which is the bulk of properties in the Philippines. Like, yeah, at the high, so we you can kind of say we're at the high end for the Philippines market. You would consider us high end. We have seen a slowdown, so the prices are not going up. Rent is about the same. The all of this came about with what they call POGOs, which is an overseas gambling business that has been running in the Philippines for many years, and they found out that that was just full of scam and issues, and all sorts of, people were getting tortured if they couldn't scam and stuff like that. It was turned really
Wow.
bad, so
Okay.
they closed all that down. I think that may pushed out something like 30,000 to 40,000 foreign workers, and that just like both on normal condos and everything else just. Boom, it went down. So there's an oversupply in the Philippines, will probably correct itself over the next 2 to 3 years. So for instance, I have one apartment in a place called BGC. I bought it for 12 million. I potentially sell it for maybe 20 some million pesos, and now some of our neighbors are starting to sell their units for 19. So it went up, and now it's come back down a little bit, especially those who feel the need to sell. They are struggling, I think. For those who can just hang on to the unit, rent them out, it's not such a big issue, but yeah, it is what it is, I guess.
Okay, so that's not no place to continue to park your money at the moment.
And no, so we have bought one more unit in the Philippines that is under development, but yeah, it's just one we should try and diversify. And so I'm originally from Denmark, which is far away in Europe, and we don't go there that often. I was keen on buying some things, so we had a place in Denmark, but in things in Denmark are a bit more complicated, because if you own a property in Denmark, if you don't live it in yourself, you have to rent it out. You can't just own a unit and then park it up and then use it as a holiday home. You can, but then the house needs to be dedicated as a holiday home, and yeah, those houses are out in the countryside, so to say, so they're not in the city, so then you need a car and blah blah blah. So we were like, this is all too complicated. So we thought maybe Japan.
Understood. Okay, so when you're saying Japan, are you because you mentioned your son and his Japanese girlfriend, so are you talking about a holiday home or a strictly investment home?
No,
Okay.
we would. We are just looking to invest, so we have long-term income coming back. As I'm about 50, my wife is a little bit older than me, and we are starting to just invest in kind of long-term things, so we have continuous income when we get older.
Okay, so simple, strictly investment property. You're not going to be using it for any other purpose unless it happens to be vacant.
Correct. So that's basically, so we have these units in BGC in the Philippines, just like kind of the banking district, and in there, if for any chance the unit doesn't have a tenant, we sometimes go there and stay, because sometimes they're vacant for a month or so in between tenants, and then yeah, we do that, and then yeah, that's it.
It's good that you're
It's
flexible.
generally rented out 94% of the time.
Okay. So in Japan, long-term lease, the legislation is fairly tenant-oriented, not because it's mainly because a good few decades ago, landlords were taking advantage of tenants in all kinds of nefarious ways. I mean, Japanese by nature are very docile and landlords were letting a tenant in, then kicking them out, collecting all sorts of exuberant fees from the previous tenant and the next tenant. So they revamped the law to make it more tenant-oriented. What this means is that Number one, if you buy a tenanted property, if there's already a tenant in there, which means it's generating income from day one, there are no interior inspections. So you know how in Australia, in between lease renewals or once a year, once every 2 years, the property manager comes and inspects the interior of the property. That doesn't happen in Japan. While a property is tenanted, nobody is allowed to enter unless it's by the tenant's request.
Okay, not even for structural inspections or just to ensure maintenance of the building or anything like
No, exterior only if it's tenanted. I mean,
that?
you can ask them, but they're within their rights to refuse. And
Okay.
most of them will refuse. Japanese tenants don't like to be bothered, right? Basically,
It's kind of fair enough.
human interaction is not a huge thing here.
Okay, yeah, no worries.
And the other thing is that long-term residential leases, standard leases, are assumed to automatically renew every 2 years.
Okay.
If you do not want to renew the lease, you would need to notify the tenant 6 months before the lease expires. And
Okay, that's different to where we are, because
wait,
where
wait,
we
wait. I'm not finished. Let me finish that thought. And because they would have a legal leg to stand on if they complain and choose not to vacate the property, which has never happened to us, that I mean, normally they would just move out, but because they would have a legal leg to stand on if they prefer not to vacate, what we would normally do is we would offer them compensation if we're not renewing the lease to the tune of about 6 to 10 months of rent, which is what it costs them to relocate.
It costs them 6 to 10 months rent to relocate.
Yes, because when you move into a new rental property in Japan, you need to pay all kinds of fees. There's a contract signing fee, which is about 1 month of rent. There is something called a reikin, a thank you fee to the landlord in most places, which is another month of rent. The security deposit that they need to pay and probably will not get back is another month of rent. And the move itself costs them about 3 4 months of rent. So we normally, if we do want to not renew the lease, we would offer them compensation to avoid any trouble. Now, you don't have to, but just to be on the safe side, we'd normally offer that.
Yeah, but that's a whole year's rent you lose then. That seems extreme.
You don't have to, but if they do, it never happened to us because they tend to be very docile Japanese tenants. But if we happen to get a very bored old man, for example, with too much time on their hands, they might decide to make a court case of it. So eventually you will be able to vacate them, but again, to be on the safe side, we'd offer them compensation. And also, it's the right thing to do because that's what it costs them to move.
Oh yeah, but if the agreement is finished, then yeah, okay, because I have Japanese tenants in the Philippines. And yeah, they're good tenants, but it's just like the lease is finished, that's what it is.
Well,
And it's up to them if they want to renew or not.
so that's what I'm saying. Here, standard residential lease is by law assumed to automatically renew every 2 years. So the lease is technically not finished until the tenant decides to move out. If you want them to move out, you'd notify them 6 months before the lease expires. And to be on the safe side, you would probably would be a good idea to offer them compensation.
So if they when the lease runs out and it renews, can you then change the rate, or is it just like nah, that's the same rate, that's just or how does that work? Like, so let's say they've been there for 2 years, that's the end of that lease, and now you're saying it's just automatically renews, but what about the rate? That does that change? Is that indexed, or
Well,
how do they look at that?
salaries and rents haven't really gone up in Japan in the last couple of decades. There was
Yeah, I hear that.
25 years of deflation. So you can raise the rent if you think that you'd potentially get that rent from a new tenant, but I wouldn't do that if you're not sure about that, because then they'll probably just move out and you'll have to pay the expenses of the renovation, the repair, the sprucing up of the unit for the next tenant, only to get the same rent or less. So probably not a good idea unless we're 100% certain that rents have actually gone up in that area, which is rare.
Okay, yeah, sure. Interesting. It's because here, like especially in Australia, rents are going up all the time.
I know, I've lived on the Gold Coast for about 10 years. I remember very well.
It's just like that, like Now when I own my own property, it doesn't matter, but yeah, it's a bit crazy the way that they do that. But yeah, it's interesting. Okay.
Yep.
Very interesting. But I am also concerned that there is a property boom in Australia that's gonna turn into a bubble and deflate.
I keep hearing that, but it hasn't happened yet. I've been hearing that since I moved to Australia and the first time over 20 years ago, I've been hearing that, but it hasn't happened yet.
If you look at what happened in 2013, the property completely disintegrated on itself.
Yep.
So, okay. Very interesting.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiv Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com. And his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
So what happens from here?
Well, first of all, let's determine what sort of property you'd be interested in. What's the rough budget you were thinking to invest?
Well, I don't know. I'm looking for something that can give 6 or 7% yield. So I don't know what that would look like.
So just so we're on the same page, we normally talk about net pre-tax yield. So including all of your purchase costs and all of the known management costs, but not including your income tax, which would vary depending on what income you've got in Japan, and not including any unknowns like vacancies, maintenance, and so forth. So net.
It's in the car.
Sorry.
There's just someone else. Yeah, the keys in the car. The fob is lying in the console. No worries. Sorry, just someone else that came in. He needed one of the cars.
Yeah. So net pre-tax, if we're looking at individual condo units, we're probably looking at somewhere between 5 to 6% in the locations and property profiles that we'd recommend. You can get lower yield if you go for central Tokyo, central Osaka, places like that. So, but I mean, Japan has been growing in value in the last 12, 13 years, but that's on the back of, again, 25 years of deflation. So I'm a bit hesitant to recommend it as a capital growth environment.
Yeah. So, I think the Philippines have kind of entered into this where they're just plodding along. There's no real growth in their real estate at the moment. Because as we get the same rental money that we did 5 years ago. So it was 6% in the Philippines. Now we're down at 3.5%.
Okay, so here we would normally aim for 5 to 6%, 6% if we're lucky with individual condo units. If you buy a small apartment building, say 2 to 3 floors, 4 to 12 units, so you have multiple income streams and you own the entire land parcel, not just a smidgen like you do with a condo. We could potentially get a little bit higher, maybe 6.5%, but then there's no owner union, there's no reserve fund, so you have to put money aside for structural repairs and renovations. So I think over time it would probably even out to about 6%.
Well, that's interesting.
Seven is
So,
very rare. I haven't seen seven here for a good 6, 7 years, at least not
yeah.
with properties that I can recommend.
That's fine. So how does it work when people buy properties in Japan? Do they go for party financing? Do they come in with all the money themselves, or how do they go about that?
Financing for non-residents is rare here. There are a few options, but most of them would require that you set up a Japanese corporate structure, and those and appoint potentially appoint a Japanese resident as a CEO of the company. So all of those corporate upkeep costs would translate into something like 3,000 to 4,000 Australian dollars every year. So if we're going that route, we just need to make sure that you're buying something that justifies that, right? Most of our clients are cash buyers. We have maybe a handful that have gone with loans.
That's interesting. So what's the value of units in Japan with a 5-6% yield? Are you talking 40 million yen? Is it 100 million yen? Is it
Well,
10?
the
I
sky is the
don't know.
limit, but if you're talking about, so firstly, we probably wouldn't recommend single family homes unless you want to get into a renovation project because they're not really built to last in Japan. They're not very durable materials. And also,
Surprising.
sorry?
That's very surprising. I thought Japanese builders were quite good. You
The
hear.
builders are, but I mean, the materials are just not there. They're not built to last. And the main reason for that is it's kind of a, I mean, depends on who you ask. Some people say it's a builder's industry conspiracy because they want to sell more houses. But in my opinion, it's more related to the fact that with Japan's earthquakes and very frequent typhoons, properties really don't last that much, even if they are built very well. So single family homes are usually not built to last. If you buy one brand new, then you would get, I don't know, about 20 years out of it before you start thinking about maintenance and repairs in a more significant way. But then the yield would be quite low if it's brand new. So, and also Japan's population trend being what it is, it takes longer to find a family tenant than it does to find a single or couple.
It's just because, so in the Philippines, we also have frequent earthquakes, similar to Japan, I would say, and large scale typhoons. And we have our own home there. There's probably 10 years old. There's no wear or tear that you can see. Like,
Yeah,
there
10
might
years
be a
old.
leak in the roof, and then that's it. But besides from that, the
10 years
structure
old
in
would,
itself.
yeah, 10 years old would still be okay. Up to 20, 25 years old would still be okay. Once they hit 30, 35, they start deteriorating fairly rapidly. So once they hit 30, 25, 30, you'd probably factor in, I don't know, 2,000 to 3,000 bucks a year in annual maintenance. Once they hit 40, 50, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 bucks a year in annual maintenance. So we can go for that if you want, but
No. It's not like that. Like, we do like reno jobs, especially my wife. She's into that kind of stuff. But I think what we would like to do too, we would like a test project to just get our toes wet and see if this is something for us without going like crazy in any shape or form. Like,
So if you
also
want fun,
because, yeah,
sorry,
sorry.
go ahead.
No, it's just as I said, when we were in the Philippines, we bought the first unit. We're like 6 months later, we're like, oh, this works out quite well. Like, let's get another one and then another one, stuff like that. It's just, I would say that's how it kind of ended up. So, we'll probably something similar for Japan. Like, where if we tested a project and it worked reasonably well, then yeah, that would be reason to expand.
Okay, so if we put the single family homes aside for a moment, they're a viable option, but they're a lot more hands-on. If you want something as close to semi-passive as possible, then we'd go for condo units, which would normally, the ones that we'd recommend, I mean, you can buy them as cheap as 30, 40,000 Australian, but the ones that we'd recommend that are in better locations and slightly younger buildings probably start at about 70, 80,000 Australian.
Oh, okay. That's not bad.
Not bad. And the small buildings that I've mentioned before, which give you more flexibility and better potential for growth just because you own more land, those start at around 400,000 Australian.
Okay.
And then you get multiple income streams, which gives you a bit of income diversity. If one tenant moves out, you're not completely down to zero. There's still like four.
Okay, that's very interesting. Like, we would probably go for 70 to 80,000 just to start off with, just to get our toes wet and see how it works out for us, and let that kind of fester for maybe half a year. And then from there, we would, if it went well, this is because. Without being like, you know, a lot of people promise us stuff, especially when they're involved in real estate. So we've learned that, you know, some of these promises need to be tested before you go crazy investment. So
in our case, mainly for our reputation, but also because we're probably going to be managing the property for you. If we sell you on stories that are not going to come true, it's going to come back to bite us in the bum.
Yeah, I understand that, but there's a lot of people that do short-sighted business, and all they care about is today and tomorrow. The fact that people live for 30, 40 years, that doesn't register on
it's a healthy approach. Most of our customers test it out in exactly the same way.
Happy days. All right, that seems reasonably interesting. Do you have anything you can send us in regards to potential projects, or not projects, but potential properties, and how it would look? For something in that $70,000-$80,000 range?
Well, the way that we work is we're not realtors. We don't have any pool of
properties. Oh, okay. Okay.
We don't have any pool of properties to recommend. We can put in a couple of hours of free research on your behalf just to give you an idea of what's out there within that budget that you've mentioned.
Okay.
And then when you're ready to pull the trigger, let us know and we'll get started. But most of the units we'll send to you, it's a very liquid market. So most of the units we send to you,
they're
not going to be there in a number of a few weeks.
Oh, it's that quick?
Yes, they say, especially on the cheaper end of the market, like you're looking at, they're going to sell very quickly. And if they're still there a month later, I'd say there's probably something that came up.
There's something. Wow, that's interesting, because over here, the low end is not at 70,000 or 80,000. It's probably like 300,000 or 400,000. But nonetheless, even those, they will take months to sell.
The 300,000 to 400,000 ones might take months to sell, not always, but maybe. But it's a very big market. It's the second or third biggest market, depending of whether you look at capital or transaction speeds, transaction numbers. So it's a very quick and very liquid market. So definitely on the cheaper end of the scale, any research that we'll send you will probably not be there in a number of 2-3 weeks.
So just send us something so we can have a look at it, and then we'll get some money ready and we'll have a look.
Sounds good. I'll pay our marketing lady to send you some samples shortly.
Yeah, because the plan is for us to go to Japan and see Japan. But I want to go. My wife wants to see the cherry blossom, and I want to see all the historic stuff. So we're probably going to end up there when all the other tourists are there. But so it's just like,
well, you've missed the cherry blossom for this year, so it'll have to be next year, I think.
She's not going to be happy about that.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe for Christmas then. You never know.
We've got some nice winter wonderlands here. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah. So, but my wife is very, because she's Filipino, she's not used to the snow. I'm from Northern Europe. I would want to, if it was me, I would be living in the north of Japan. That would be my kind of, because that reminds me of Denmark.
That's exactly the opposite of my wife and myself. I'm originally from Israel, so I'm like your wife. I need the beach and the heat, and she's from northern Japan. So we're exactly the
opposite. Very good. All right. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon. I'll get those samples to you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast. All right, so for our next call, this one is in video format and is also a fair bit longer. And it's all about Akias, how to work with those pesky rural Akia banks, what other platforms could be checked for Akia listings, and then specifically about buying in Nagano and other snowy winter wonderland type of locations, particularly on the topics of accessibility to the properties and maintenance during these colder months. We also talked about how land classifications work and what caveats are in place for any of those land classifications, specifically regarding farmland, whether non-residents can buy those, and if so, under what conditions, what circumstances. We talked about the difference between hiring us for a full purchase facilitation versus consulting only, and how the purchase process works overall. How much does everything cost? How long does it take? In-person or remote viewings, whether or not buyers need to be here in person at any stage during the purchase. And then, you know me, I couldn't hold myself back. We talk about the risks of buying super cheap Akias, why structural inspections are so important for these older properties, and a bit about community connections, how to be a good neighbor, and hopefully how to also find local maintenance, renovation, management, and repair professionals to work with directly. So nice long deep dive into all things related to rural Akias or abandoned slash vacant homes. Enjoy this conversation as well, and I'll see you one more time on the other side of this. Okay, you've retroactively, you watched the video interview and you're looking at a property to purchase from the Nagano Akia Bank website. Yes. Well, the problem with Akia banks is not just that they're at the lower end of the scale money-wise. They mm-hmm. are, but there are others as well. The problem is that they are very cumbersome to work with. So okay. Some of them will straight out refuse to deal with foreigners. Some of them will tell us that we need to book viewing 6 months in advance. It's just
okay.
A lot more hoops to jump through with an Akia bank just because they're government, I guess, right?
Okay, that was, I suppose, one of my, I suppose, questions leading on from the video information that I saw and sort of reading through. And yeah, is there going to be difficulties sort of going through the prefecture Akia bank, or is that something that would make it easier? So that was actually one of my...
Easier, definitely not. It might be only slightly harder as opposed to much harder or impossible, but we'll have to check each Akia bank, each local municipality's Akia bank is completely different. It's a very fragmented market. Yeah.
Yeah. The ones I'm looking at is obviously Nagano. And from what I have sort of uncovered is that Nagano is generally open to sort of foreigners, both Japanese and sort of international, I suppose, being in that region. So.
If we're dealing with a prefectural government, yes, but each municipality has its own annoying nuances. So it depends on,
Okay, yeah.
each city would be a bit different.
All right. So would you say if I had a, I'm pretty much looking at about sort of, it's pretty much two or three houses that look appealing for different reasons. Would you say that we could sort of investigate, I suppose that's obviously on your part, investigating, I suppose, how hard or how difficult it's going to be, or what type of sort of, yeah, hoops there's going to be to jump through? Because I suppose one of those that comes to mind that I've written down is there's obviously four types of, well, actually, probably five types of land or lot purchases. And that would be sort of the residential. And then you've got forest and wilderness. And a separate part is fields, and understanding that farmland is extremely difficult. Like any rice paddy or farmland has to go through a whole lot of permitting and everything. So I'm staying well away from anything described as farmland.
Depends on the size of the land plot. So if it's 500 square meters or smaller,
Yes.
the seller could fairly easily convert it into non-farmland as part of the as preparation for the settlement.
Yes.
Whether they'll agree to or not, go through the hassle or not is up to the seller, but it's doable. If it's 500 square meters or more, then I would avoid it, yes, because those are near impossible to convert, and as a non-resident and not a member of the farmers' union, you're not going to be able to purchase that.
Yes.
So the
I'd
only
like
option in those
to.
cases is to ask the seller if they'd agree to split off the farmland and only sell you the rest of it, but
Okay.
most of them would say no to that because
Okay.
it's
Yep.
very difficult for them to then just sell the farmland.
I could imagine, because it would be very similar to here, where if someone has a large section of land and they want to subdivide, essentially it costs them 20,000 Australian dollars just to do that process. So, which seems to be fairly straightforward. But what I'd
It's
like to
not that expensive here, but it's more a case of they're then stuck with a plot of land that they can only sell to farmers, and then often if they split it off, it's no longer accessible by public roads, so it's a big hassle for them to remain with that.
Of course. I'd like to focus on the houses that essentially have smaller parts of land attached to them. One is described as it's got a small field, which I think is under 500 square anyway. And so that's just a part of that little parcel of land. So, do you
But in
know
that
if
case, we would need to ask the seller if they would agree to convert it pre-settlement. They can. It's not that complicated and it's not that expensive, but some of them just don't want to deal with it. They'll just wait for somebody who wants to buy the lot.
Okay, because I is I suppose getting into this, I suppose is field being a field, forest or wilderness, is
Field.
that
Field and
separate
yes.
from
Forest and wilderness is fine. Residential or non-residential is fine. It's only field and agricultural land that's the issue.
right, so fields included in the
Yes.
agriculture, right? That's a really good note, because that might eliminate a how like a an option if it's listed as field. So I'll keep an eye on that one. Okay. No, that's good.
But a lot
That's
of the
good.
listings will just say agricultural land without specifying the size, so we won't know until we inquire.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. I suppose I've probably got a few different questions listed, but as far as understanding, like we do the documentation, obviously pay your fee, and that is it at that point in time. Is that where you go and investigate sort of the property from, like the first preference and sort of.
Normally that's how we would work. We're just a little bit too swamped and really struggling with hiring and training new staffers because we're in Fukuoka, where
Okay.
bilingual staffers is like finding a unicorn. So until
Yes.
we get all of our ducks in a row, which is probably going to be towards the end of the year,
Okay.
what I've been doing for the last year since we started having these growth pains is I'll be putting you directly in touch with a foreigner-friendly English-speaking agent who'll be able to handle the logistics of the purchase remotely in English on your behalf, same as we would have done.
Yes.
They being realtors are not going to be super strategic in their conversations with you. Their job is basically either research a listing or work with a listing that you provide and just make sure the sale goes through. So they're very transaction oriented. They're by the book, they're very honest, but
Yep.
they're not strategic. So if you
Okay.
want us to hold your hand as you work with them, review documents before you sign them, guide the agent in due diligence, that we can do at any time. That's a lot cheaper than us having to do everything on your behalf as well.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. Yeah, no worries at all. I'm quite happy to work with you, which obviously you're going through growing pains and such things. But if that's an option, more than happy to go with that. And also knowing and understanding that this is not something that is going to happen by any means quickly. And I'm very happy to spend the time to do this properly. And if that looks like it's going to be, 6 months or it would be a year, very happy to go through that process. Yeah, that's
Hopefully
fine.
within a year. We haven't had any. I mean, we have some very, very picky clients, at which point we had to tell them that what they're looking for just doesn't exist. But otherwise, yeah, within a year would normally cut it. Yeah.
All right, fantastic. Well, I'll give you a couple of other questions if that sort of helps you
Sure, sure,
with
sure.
questions and YouTube and stuff. But what I will do is I'm going to, and this will, I suppose this sort of now defines what I'm going to be doing for the upcoming snow season, sort of Japan, which is obviously December through March. So I'll sort of plan that trip. And what I'd endeavor to do is perhaps come and visit you and say hello while I'm actually in Japan over that
More than
period of
happy
time,
to.
because I'll probably be there for, depending, I'd probably be in Japan for maybe about a month or two. So
When
plenty of
roughly?
time.
Do you know when?
Probably February, I'd say February through March again, because I was
Oh,
there.
okay. So we're not getting started before then, you mean?
We can definitely get started before then, but
Okay.
I'd planning on a visit around that time, so that
Yep.
would be a good thing to do.
Sounds brilliant. But we're
Yeah.
out in Fukuoka. You have this in your itinerary? It's not nowhere near Nagano.
No, that's good. I can easily do a trip. Not a
Okay.
worry.
Very
Yeah.
happy to.
It'll be a it'll be an excellent excuse to go and visit another part of Japan and
Well, if you make sure you're here in April, we have our real estate summit in Tokyo every April and October. That's a very good time to meet other people like yourselves, talk to people who might be interested in
okay.
this project.
April over. I'll put that down.
Yeah.
I may be confined by work on those dates, but I'll definitely have a look. So I suppose that's actually probably a good lead to this question that I have. At what point in time, like what point of the process, from sort of kicking off the paperwork, then going through sort of investigating the properties, what's going to be the best time to actually visit the property? Because I remember you touched on that in, I think, the video of sort of there's a little sort of a hierarchy of how things happen. I was wondering, yeah, at what point do you say, right, I'm going to be in Japan, I can visit the property, I suppose at what stage of the process?
Well, so the way it works is if we're consulting, first of all, there's no documentation required or anything at this early stage. It's just an invoice for an hourly retainer that as soon as you pay, we can get to work. The documents you'll need to provide will come closer to signing the contract and settlement, right? So
Okay.
once we actually know which property we're going ahead with, that's when the realtor will start requiring some documentation from you. Viewings wise, if you want to see the property in person, there's no point in digging into any properties until we're about a month prior to your arrival because it's just a very liquid market. They'll be gone. A lot of them will be gone by then.
Okay.
If you're okay with remote viewings, then we just need 2, 3 weeks' notice and then we can schedule a remote viewing. And then
Okay.
we'll send somebody to the property. They'll zoom in with you. Some of the listing agents will even do that for us, but even though they're Japanese and tend to be honest, probably a better idea to have somebody from your side attend, not just rely on them.
Yeah, okay, for sure. All right. So about a month, so probably about a month away from the actual, I suppose the actual offer going in. Is that correct?
Well, to organize a viewing takes 2 to 3 weeks, whether it's remote or with you in person.
Yep.
So about a month ahead of the viewing. And then if it's a house, then you probably want a structural inspection as well. So the offer will be, depending on how old is the house, if it's fresh and newly built, maybe no. But if it's anything beyond 20 years and older, and even younger, I'd say it's worth getting a structural inspection. So the
For
offer
sure.
that we'll submit will be pending a structural inspection report. And then if the seller accepts the price, we'll go ahead and commission the inspection. But if it's a vacant home you're targeting, most of the listing agents would not accept an offer before a viewing takes place. And
So
nor
doing
do we want to
before
do
you'd
that. I
offer.
mean, it doesn't make sense to make an offer on a property that you might not like when you see in person or via phone.
For sure. That's what I was thinking was obviously you want to look at the place, look at location. It's one thing to do Google Earth and, look at Google Maps, but it's another thing to be there in person and be able to look at it. So, all right, so viewing before an offer goes in. Technicalities of viewing properties during winter. Is there any issues?
Yes, in Nagano, that could be an issue. So normally the viewings would start around April, May.
Okay, all right. So I may need to look forward from sort of, I suppose from this point, maybe look forward to letting the winter go through and planning a
Well,
trip.
if it's remote viewings, then we can go starting from now all the way until about October, November. So if you want to visit them in person and you're not coming before February, March, then yes, that would have to be next year.
All right. I could
I would
probably
line up
schedule.
just because a lot
Sorry.
of the properties will fall through for various reasons, either on the structural inspection or the seller might not sell or somebody else might buy them. So if we're sending somebody out there, even if you go in person, we might have to send somebody out with you because a lot of the listing agents will freak out at the thought of dealing with a foreigner. So
Of course.
if we're going to be making better use of your time and the expenses that trip will cost, then we'd better line up a good few viewings, make a day or two of it.
For sure. Well, I could probably look at, I'd say I could look at planning a trip before winter. So look at something sort of, what are we now? So June, July, August, September, October, maybe something around that October sort of mark. And what I could do is have, prior to that, maybe have, more than a few. To sort of organize and we can maybe sort of knock them all off within I suppose a week's period of and I'd be over there for say 2 weeks and allow some time either side of those.
Well, I mean, if we're sending somebody with you, which is probably going to be the case, then we want to minimize hotel costs as well. And time that they spend out of the office with you is time that they'll have to charge for. So let's try to keep it within 2 days. Otherwise, it might end up
Okay. Yeah, all right, cool. So
costing too
within a
much.
very a nice short period of two. Fantastic. Good thing is all of these properties are all located, I'm going to say, very close to each other. Like each one is within no more than sort of 20-minute drive, really.
Okay,
So,
that's good. And
yeah.
are they, you mentioned two or three houses. Are these all for your private use, or do you have any other plans? Are you running
Yes.
business there?
Yeah,
Okay.
so I'm just looking at, and I took note from what you said about, you don't make multiple offers on multiple places. So, yeah, so myself, all I'm looking at is one property just for myself, private use, essentially December, January, and February, and but maybe part of March for the winter season at Hakaba. And then what I'd like to do is spend probably a month in the sort of the summer months, and that would be to tend to the house, that type of thing. So it would be two trips to Japan per year and just for private use. And perhaps while I'm there, like, maybe a family or friends might come and stay, because
Okay,
I
so
want to be,
when you mentioned two, three properties, you meant two, three potential listings.
two, three
Ah,
potential listings.
Well,
Yeah. So
let's try to make it more like five or six so we can make better use of time with for whoever goes there.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, definitely. I think, and I suppose with time going on, I wonder if more will be added to that, Nagano, like IKEA bank, basically. So, and what I'll do is I'll do further sort of research and searching to see if there are other properties available.
Sure.
So, yeah, that would be
How
good.
are you searching, by the way? Are you finding the listings that you need?
I'm going via, so what I'm doing is I'm searching via, I've actually got the official Nagano Akia, like the actual municipality, their actual website, and that's listing approximately 73 properties, ranging from sort of like, very, very like low end, almost needing to be demolished, through to sort of quite high end, like very beautiful, almost newer places. So that listing, and then there's a few others that I've sort of been having a look at, but there are a number of sort of, I suppose, IKEA websites that are just listings for real estate listings. And they can vary. They sometimes want subscriptions for money, just so that you can look at, more than a number of them. So I've just been sort of looking, but I think the Nagano one seems to be the best one. It seems to be official, and a couple have been added, so it's obviously very active.
Okay, I would give Akiamart a shot. You know Akiamart as well?
Yes, I do. I'll just jot that down.
If you use our
Again.
company name as a discount voucher on checkout, you'll get a cheaper subscription too.
Okay.
NTI is the company name.
Yep, I'll do NTI. Yep, so IKEA Mart. I do believe I've looked at IKEA Mart. There's another one called IKEA Bank. And I
Yeah,
think there's
IKEA
one
Bank is
called.
more of a community training. I mean, they do have listings, but they're more focused on.
Okay.
Oh, I
Another one
see.
called
Sorry.
All IKEAs, like ALL, All IKEAs is another one
That one
that comes to
I'm not
mind.
familiar. I know IKEA Hub, I know the IKEA Hub crew, and I know the IKEA Mart crew, and the Cheap Houses Japan crew. All
Okay.
IKEAs, I'm not familiar with who's running it, but I have noticed that a lot of the listings there are already expired by the time we get to them, so I'm
Okay.
not sure
This is good
how
to know.
official that one might be.
Right. Okay. I'll go to IKEA Mart and I'll get onto that as well and do a search, because I sort of recognize that just looking at the Nagano one, I suppose, sort of narrows, it's kind of a bit of a narrow view, whereas looking broadly might sort of bring up more in that within that area, and then we'd have more to look at in that trip.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akia, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akia Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily, ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties. Akiamart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiamart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akia-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akia-mart.com, and kick off your search today. What's your budget? You're saying you're looking at ones that run the gamut, but what would you be comfortable
Yeah,
with? Because I'm always a
pretty.
lot more comfortable helping people buy something that's not going to need a lot of renovations.
Yeah, I've actually got a fairly good construction background, so doing a good like construction and woodworking and that type of thing. So sort of part of the process would be like, because obviously looking at some of the lower end ones, kitchens and things need redoing. But basically, I was looking up to about the 2.5 million mark.
2 point, okay, so that's scraping the bottom of the barrel there.
Yeah, that's like usually the lower ones, they're usually a bit more remote. It seems to be the area that I'm looking, which is almost the half, or they're closer to Nagano, but there are some that are about the halfway point between Nagano and also Hakuba. So it's within that sort of 1 hour's drive between those two places. That's where most of these are coming up, and most of them seem to be in the lower and not purposely looking for stuff that is cheap. It just seems to be that all of these houses that exist in this area are around those prices. There are some that sort of go to the 3, maybe 4 million, but they seem to be newer places. They're not of the solid wood construction. They seem to have things sort of, more things wrong with them, even though they're more expensive. So as this research has been going on, I've actually been sort of looking at places that I'm going, oh, these ones that I'm like the Kominka style that look, they're very solidly built. They've
They are,
got.
but just bear in mind that with all of those traditional features, you're not going to be able to DIY that. You're going to have to get artisans in to fix whatever needs to be
Yes.
fixed. And though they can cost 4 or 5 times as much as a modern build renovation company.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're definitely paying for their experience. Definitely. Yeah.
So if you
So.
want the Kominka style, I agree, they're built a lot sturdier, but when you do need to do work on them, it will cost you.
Yeah, that's something I've actually looked at and thought that would be something I'd be willing to pay for. If it's something that is of a structural nature, then that money would be well spent because I don't want to go and change the structural integrity of the building by say, cutting and shutting things and putting screws and nails where obviously it's just timber joining. So that's something I've looked at and thought that would be money well spent.
So you're looking at more of a restoration project than a renovation project, is that right?
I'd say something that is not dilapidated, something that's not in extremely bad condition. Most of the things that I've been looking at seem to be in fairly good condition. And there seems to be more things like the interior, like the tatami mats need to be replaced. There seems to be some, not water damage, but more like actual sun fading of like the top sections of like walls where the photo or the pictures would go.
I'm more concerned about the stuff that we can't see, like the tilting, the sinking, the termite tracks, the roof issues that have not manifested in like unless you actually peek into the attic space, you can see that there's issues with the roof.
Yeah, that's something I'd like to be able to look at myself because going from that sort of my background should be able to spot things fairly easily, like sort of uneven foundations and all that type of thing. So I've actually done some, I've been a part of some building inspections here in Australia, especially in Victoria, Australia. We're looking at like basically the pier sections of houses and checking all of those through and sort of what that, basically understanding that process.
Will you have the tools with you though to measure tilting and whatnot? Because the inspection companies do a very thorough tech heavy job on that.
Yeah, I'd be happy to pay for an inspection if obviously the seller is happy to, or the real estate agent is happy for me to sort of go through that process.
But the viewing would come first and you want to view them in person.
Yeah, that would, I think that would be best. Yeah. And then I suppose if there is one that's in particular, like that's the one that's particularly one that I'd really like to investigate, obviously do was it offer first and then building inspection?
Yes, we don't want to go ahead and pay for the inspection if there's not going to be an offer accepted. So that'll be a waste of 1,000 or 2,000 bucks. So, okay. So if you're coming in October, first off, we already know the dates for the October summit. So 4 or 5 October in Tokyo is going to be our summit.
Okay, fourth
That'll
and
be the
fifth of
chance
October,
to
yeah.
meet face to face and get you to meet with other people who are, doing similar things.
Okay,
And
fourth
then,
of fifth of October. And that's in Tokyo.
I will be gone the 2nd week of October, but we'll get started with an agent so we can start scheduling viewings and stuff. So if the plan is to be here in October, then let's get our shortlist done early to mid-September.
All right, I'll jot that one down as well. So September, we'll have the short list and then look at October for, because what I'll do is I'll be able to, what I'll be able to do is schedule things for work where I just basically tell them that I'm not available. I'd have my short list ready for September, have the trip planned for October, and then we could sort of go like get that happening.
Yep,
Yeah,
that
that would
sounds
be
like a
great.
plan. All right, fantastic. Look forward to
Excellent.
hearing from you.
Oh, just one quick, while I've got you, just Just wondering about the transfer or the basically connection of services like electricity and water and that type of thing.
Well, if you're not
Is
going to be a
there?
resident, I'm assuming you'll need somebody to manage the property
Yeah.
for you, which means signing up for and paying your utilities, your insurance, your annual taxes, and then
Yes.
probably depending on how often you're going to be here. But if you're not going to be here at least any other month, then you probably want a cleaning company to come and do some light vacuuming, open the doors and windows to avoid the mold and the humidity.
I've actually got a friend who lives in Hakka, but he's from Omochi, and I believe I'm going to speak to him about the availability of one of his family, perhaps to sort of visit the property, do that type of thing. But if that was not going to be
Well, could he be your
something,
proxy? Could he be your proxy for payment of bills too, or is that asking too much?
I think I'd actually propose that to him and see if that would be something that would work, and if that
Save
was
you a
going
lot of money.
to
Yeah.
work, Adam.
It'll save you a lot of money if there's somebody that you can, because I mean, we do that and other companies do that, but it's never going to be less than 150 Australian per month or so.
A month, okay, that's good to know. All right,
And
fantastic.
the cleaners would charge about $100 per visit, depending on how far they have to come.
Yep.
And then the other main thing you need to be concerned about, depending on the house, but if you have a garden or a backyard, especially one that's got the potential to be overgrown, bushes and trees overhanging the boundary lines to neighboring properties, municipality, public roads, that has to be religiously maintained where you're not in residence as well. And that could also be
Yeah.
100, $200 a month.
Yeah, that was something that I was acutely aware of, is obviously if I was there during winter and visiting for a month in summer, that those times on either side the property would need to be kept in a very good condition, obviously, because I certainly don't ever want to be someone that neighbors would frown upon.
That annoying guy, Gene. Yeah.
Yeah, I would. I'd like to say from my last visit to Japan and the experience that I had with all of the people is that I'd like to partake in community things for the time periods that I would be there. I'd like to be essentially what you would say is a good neighbor and understand all of the customs and traditions. Like I don't take any of this in a light-hearted manner. Like I certainly don't look at this as some sort of like opportunity to just have a holiday home. I'm actually looking, I'd say, in the future to be a full-time resident. That's something I
Okay.
suppose I should have said, I suppose earlier was, I suppose this is me sort of setting up my future to essentially at some point, still like working in Australia and at some point being a full-time resident. That would be something I'd really like to look forward to and be 100% of the time part of that community and being a part of things that go on, no matter like whatever sort of village that I'm living in.
That's
So
fantastic. You're on the right track to be a good Japanese neighbor.
yeah, that's probably a good way to put it. I'd like to be a very good Japanese neighbor.
Fantastic.
So, and
And
that's obviously started.
the other expense just related to snow country. I'm not
Yes.
sure how familiar you are with it, but you would need snow clearing off your roof in most cases, unless it's really slanted in the right way.
Okay.
And you need. We can probably get the cleaners to do it when they come in before winter, but you need to empty the pipes, make sure they're winter secure before you get in there, stuff that you probably already know about if you're a snowhound, but that's all other
Yeah.
expenses too.
Yeah, okay, no, that's cool. I think that's probably the objective would be to be there sort of just at that be like beginning part of December so that everything is
So you'll
prepared for
handle that.
winter.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd be there basically December, January, February, and sort of perhaps the tail end of March, because I know we got, what was it? I think March, probably about the 10th or 11th of March, there was a massive dump of snow. And so all the snow clearing that had gone on, everyone basically had to do it again. So it was like
Yeah.
roofs and everything had to be redone. So I can
Just so
imagine.
you know what you're getting into, because we do have a lot of customers with this winter wonderland image in their mind, but they're not
Oh, yeah.
actually aware of what comes with it. So.
Yeah. Well, I think within sort of the, I suppose within the, the mountain community that I'm finding myself sort of attracted to and being a part of, and people who live through that region. I'd like to think that perhaps I could sort of offer people, like locals, like essentially some form of like work where I could say, hey, if you could come to my property and do these things, I could look after them financially. That'd be a nice way to sort of spread that kind of spread the community thing around as well.
That'll have to be you when you're actually there. I mean, we can outsource services, but we work with companies. We can't like research, bored retirees who have time on their hand. That's a bit beyond our scope. So
Oh,
when
this would
you're
be
there, maybe what I'm thinking is you might start with outsourced management, and then as you become used to and integrated in the community, you'll be able to slowly replace that.
Oh, this would be part of basically like the sort of the snowboarding sort of mountain people that I know in Japan. So like locals who I've sort of met and hung out with, and
And they probably
like
already
people.
have these contacts, right?
So that's what I was sort of thinking. I'll basically start talking to those guys about, and especially my friend Yu. I'd speak to him and say, okay, like who do you know who could assist me with basically maintaining this property and just ensuring that obviously it's well looked after and it's in a fit state so that neighbors aren't being upset for sure. And also the integrity of the property.
Right.
Easy.
So step by step, we're aiming, I guess, towards October. So let's get the shortlist around September and we'll take it from there.
All right, fantastic. What would you like to do from here as far as just basically email correspondence and looking, I suppose, at the agent that you're going to sort of refer me to?
Yeah, but there's no point dealing with the agent before we're ready to start making inquiries, which again is going to be September-ish.
September? Okay, no worries at all. Excellent.
So not, I mean, we can definitely keep the toing and froing, and I'll give you my own two cents about any properties you're looking at just to help you get used to the due diligence process.
Yes, for
So I
sure. That'd
will
be good.
reply to your last email with just a blank signature. You've got my mobile number there. So if you add me on WhatsApp, that's where I'm most responsive by WhatsApp messages.
Okay. Ah, fantastic. Yeah, no worries at all. I can send some messages through. And can I, do you want links to any properties sent through WhatsApp or do you want those through an email?
Easiest via WhatsApp if you want my quick response. I'm fine with email, but it takes me a while to get there.
No worries at all. And I understand you're busy, so don't worry, I won't be troubling you every day with lots
No,
of questions.
no trouble. That's what I do. I like doing this.
And just the documentation for like when I have to have things signed by the like the Justice of the Peace here in Australia for documentation, is
If
that
we're going
something
the
that's
consulting route, then that's we don't require that. We're just going to need the invoice paid. The agent that we'll work with will need you to provide not the same documents, but slightly different documents. But that's again, that's when we sign a purchase contract. We're still months away from that.
I was just wondering how they're sent and received. Is that sent sort of by registered post because they would be physical documentation, or is
Yes,
it
and we'll
something?
send you files that you'll have printed, signed, and witnessed in Australia, and then you put them. I'd go with courier, like EMS, not registered post, because that's very unreliable on delivery times.
EMS, that's for
EMS
post.
or DHL or whatever Australia is using these days, but courier
I
would
think they
work.
use almost everyone now. Like we've got everybody here. So EMS and DHL. And so we can do registered posts for that stuff because I thought that would be the case.
I mean, anything with tracking will be great just so that it doesn't get lost in transit. But if it's not courier service, it can take, I don't know, unreliable. The courier services will get here within a week or 10 days at most.
I'd hate for any of that kind of information to go missing as well because then that's a whole nother thing. And it was OFX is for monetary transfers, like paying money to yourself for services.
For the big transfer, like the property purchase itself, OFX is the best one. Anything under 1 million yen, Wise is the best one to go with.
Right, OFX and Wise.
Yeah,
I'll
I'll
keep.
send you referral links to both of them now, so we'll both get some bonuses. Give me a second.
Yeah, for sure. Too easy. Excellent. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you going through all this stuff.
Oh, pleasure, right? Where are we? Invoices.
So again, via email, I'll just reply with the referral links to Wise are the easiest and quickest to work with, but their fees get expensive when they go over 1 million yen,
Okay.
at least into and out of Japan. I think in other countries they do better, but into and out of Japan, OFX would be the way to go when
All
it's
right.
over 1 million yen. So those
Fantastic.
two referral links will give you and me all kinds of bonuses if you use them to sign up, and I'd sign up
Okay.
with both in preparation.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll do that for sure.
OFX are a bit tougher on the compliance because they handle bigger transfers. So if you run into any trouble onboarding with them, let me know and I'll loop our account manager in.
All right, fantastic. Will do. I'll get those things organized. And what I'll do is I'll look at the IKEA Mart and have a bit more of a broader search. And also, what I'll do is I'm definitely, yeah, as I said, I'm definitely not looking at stuff that I don't want really. I'm not specific, like, oh, it has to be dirt cheap or anything. I think it's just more about the house itself, the location and condition. I think the cost. Like, really looking at that thing of like whatever the cost is going to be, that's what it's going to be. So I'm not limiting myself really to any sort of like, oh, I can only afford this much. So
Well,
that's something.
if you're going Kominka, then yeah, a lot of them will be, I mean, there are beautiful multi-million dollar Kominkas, but most of them will be cheaper. It's just a matter of we'll have to do some extra, really, really get down into the structural inspection to make sure that it's
Yeah,
becoming a part of the seams.
for sure. I did find one place that was it was the most amazing place you've ever seen. And I think in Australian dollars it was about 500 and probably about $500,000. It was almost like an emperor's kind of I don't
Yeah,
even know
those
how
are
to
the ones I
describe
love.
it.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And I said to my mum, I was like, Mum, you really should sell your apartment here and go buy that. I think it was like about 20 rooms. It was actually really
That's
incredible.
a lot of maintenance, though.
Oh, it was a big property. Big
Yeah.
property. Yeah, but very beautiful.
So
So
what's your top budget, do you think? So that's obviously over your top budget. What's your top
oh
budget for
yeah,
this
for
year?
sure. I mean, I'd probably like to spend something in that sort of 20,000 to 30,000 Australian dollars. So
Okay.
that's a think about you. Now what's that working out to be? That's about the sort of, up to three, I think that's about the 3 million or 3.5 million mark.
These are
I think.
old houses that will take a lot of work. I know that you're the DIY
Yeah.
type, but again, bear in mind there's a lot of stuff that you're not able to do on your own.
Yeah.
Obviously, plumbing and wiring, but the structural stuff as well. So just
Yep.
make sure you're not buying for 2, 3 million and then spending another 15 million on top of that to bring it to livable condition.
Yeah. Something I'm acutely aware of is that sort of what would you call it? Being idealistic, like, oh yeah, that'll be fine. I could live in that, but really, can you live in a place that's that needs major repairs or major work?
Plus,
So
it's deteriorating. The repairs cost more and more the longer you don't attend to them, right?
that's very true. Yeah,
Yeah.
very much so. So yeah, that's why something looking at that thing of like, I'd love to come and see them, investigate them. Sort of look at and also get an idea of, I suppose it's that locational thing. Yeah, so, and also moving forward, I think, sort of between you and I have basically my career is literally taken sort of the next step where my monetary return is sort of really looking really good. So I'd say probably, yeah, even within the next sort of 4 to 5 or 6 months, my budget or what I call my like what I'd what I'm looking to spend may actually be able to go up considerably. So that's sort of something I was going to also sort of touch on and say, do you think it's worth waiting a period of time for all those things to sort of come in, go for something a bit more, a bit higher priced as opposed to something that's sort of
That's
in that
always, honestly,
lower realm?
that's always preferable. I'm always of the mind that I'd rather pay a higher price up front and not have so many question marks on how much I might need to pay down the track.
Yep.
So the younger you can aim, the better, but you're looking for a Cominca, so that's by nature that's going to be at least 50, 60 years and older in most cases.
Yeah.
I think let's just look for sturdier ones because the very cheap ones are probably there's a reason that they're that cheap.
They might be falling down. So yeah, I think the Kaminka for me represents that traditional Japanese style of living, the sort of I think it's obviously, and I'm obviously not alone, but it's a very attractive way of living in Japan, I think, for myself. And I think that being sort of more rural, remote in the mountains is obviously a traditional way of living. And I think, and it's that peace and quiet that I'm
There's a whole other conversation about just make sure you know what you're getting into community-wise, because depending, I mean, yes, Nagano has a lot of tourist hotspots, but some of those little towns are not very foreigner-friendly.
That's something I'd also like to sort of investigate as well, I suppose, on those viewings, is to have a chat and sort of maybe not chat to the neighbors, but get a little bit of info about the village.
Yeah, get a feel for the place, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be good. So yeah, a few things to do.
Awesome. Well,
All
just
right,
touch
Ziv.
base again early September and take it from there.
Fantastic. I'll get all of my things organized and I'll be in touch then.
Perfect. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you, mate. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
You too. So there you go. Hopefully that answered a lot of the questions that many of you who are looking at the Akiya market for the very first time have. Not a bad idea for many of you, but might not really be suitable for everybody else, especially if you're not 100% sure on what you're getting into. So again, not necessarily a case of buyer beware, but definitely a case of prior education, potentially saving you lots of financial and other types of headaches. And again, if you'd like to hear from our experts on the topic of Akiyas, renovations, the rural lifestyle, and get in touch with people who have already gotten a few of these projects under their belts, whether as professional service providers to buyers like yourselves or Akiya buyers themselves, the Japan Real Estate Summit's Spring Session, 18th and 19th April 2026, is now open for pre-registration. Hop over to nippontradings.com, check out the previous summit's highlights, reels, and presentations if you haven't attended one of these yet, and secure those discounted tickets today, either in person if you can make it, or online via the stream. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com, and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.